simply, a story of the lives of two people. My son and me, who have traveled a bumpy, sometimes misdirected 30-year course marked by the ordinary and the extraordinary. That it seeks answers is obvious. But there is no promise that all questions have been neatly resolved. Nor have I attempted clarifying social and psychological observations I'm woefully unqualified to make. At best, putting the story to paper has provided me some understanding, some logical sorting of things that have benefited me and, I hope, might be of some aid to others. Which is to say, this project was born of admittedly selfish, cathartic intent. There will, I know, be critics quick to label what I've done as exploitation. They are fully entitled to their opinion. My only response is that this is a project that has played on my mind for many years, a private muse that, in time, literally begged for public airing. Yet even after making the commitment to its writing, following long discussions with my son about direction and purpose, there were times of doubt. More than once during the course of telling this story, I considered abandoning it for a more comfortable subject. Yet I found myself continuing to press on, reflecting and writing. The book, quite literally, kept calling out to me. Why? Because I felt the need to see where the story went, what too long hidden truths might, in fact, be discovered. When, some time ago, while enjoying the warm afternoon sun in a prison yard, my son asked what had prompted my desire to write such a book, my response was not immediate, despite the fact it was a question deserving an honest reply. I rose from the bench where we were seated, went inside for a cup of bitter vending machine coffee, then returned to where he waited. I did not, I finally explained, want to go to my grave wondering what had happened to us, not having made the effort to understand why our relationship had been what it was. I needed to know how love and anger could so long coexist between two people. I needed to know the reasons for his behavior and the degree of blame I should rightfully bear. It was time for straightforward answers, painful though they may be. Two, there seemed to me an issue of fair play to consider. In recent years, I have focused a great deal of my professional attention on books and articles that deal with crimes and the deep, painful scars they leave. I've spent agonizing hours in the company of grieving mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, friends and family who, in complete trust, have detailed for me their most intimate thoughts. I shared the lives of the families of three bright and talented teenagers who were brutally murdered during an innocent trip to a lake near Waco, Texas, there to do nothing more than sit on a park bench and watch what would ultimately become their final sunset. The parents of a 21-year-old undercover narcotics officer, murdered by the teenage son of a Dallas police officer, welcomed me into their home and tearfully described the nightmare their lives had become. My sympathy for them was great, but no more so than that I would come to feel for the caring, heartbroken parents of the misguided youngster who had pulled the trigger, then gone off to spend years behind prison bars. I've heard the wrenching story of a mother whose daughter left one evening to attend a concert, never to be heard from again. Spent long into the night hours with a distraught husband, falsely accused of the torturous murder of his estranged wife. Listened to the terrifying recollections of those who saw loved ones randomly gunned down when a deranged young man named George Hennard entered a Luby's cafeteria.